Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. Our guest this week joins us from slightly outside of Canby. It's Ed Shriver, the newly appointed director of Idaho Fish and Game. But he has deep roots in the Canby area, and he'll tell us all about it.
Everyone loves splash pads. They're like big drinking water fountains that children play in. Canby is getting one, but we don't know where. On this week's Soapbox, Tyler and I discuss where we think it should go. But first, the news. The Canby Parks and Recreation Advisory Board is moving forward on its plans to advance several high-profile projects Canby residents have been begging for, including a splash pad. Mayor Brian Hodson informed councilors at the Canby City Council meeting Wednesday that the Park Board plans to appear at the January 16th meeting to present recommendations for the splash pad, as well as which city park they think would be best suited for it.
They've done quite a bit of conversation on pros and cons of a couple of different parks here in town. And so I've asked them to come and actually make a presentation a little bit to us on their process and what led them to the decision that they've come to.
Hodson said the board is also moving forward with the discussions for a new project, a potential sports field complex for the area located behind Ackerman Center and Lee Elementary School. The field has some simple baseball and softball diamonds built on it now, but is mostly open space. Discussions are still in the very early stages, but Hodson said a small group representing the Canby School District has been looking at the potential of such a project for some time, and the city, which owns neighboring Legacy Park and the land behind it, currently used for a couple of soccer fields, would be a natural partner.
So right now, in conversation, Park Advisory Board is very interested in what it could look like to do a field complex back there, as is the school district. The greater conversation is then, what's the school district's plan for Ackerman? What could that potentially lead to? So there's a lot of conversation still on this, but these are some preliminary things that I'm really, really excited about seeing.
A couple months ago, the city gave its park board the go-ahead to move forward with evaluations and recommendations for certain projects that are sure to be detailed in the Canby Parks and Recreation Master Plan, currently under revision. These projects included a splash pad and the Canby Dog Park. A 3-alarm commercial fire ravaged a warehouse full of hay in Aurora Wednesday night. The building was part of the Anderson Hay and Grain Company facility, located just west of Aurora State Airport and Highway 551. Crews from Aurora Fire District, Canby Fire District, Woodburn Fire District, and Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue battled the blaze throughout the night. Aurora personnel were still on the scene Thursday morning, monitoring the fire as it continued to smolder even after the building collapsed. In an email Friday, Aurora Fire Chief Joshua Williams said his crews had handed the situation over to the property owner after more than 15 hours on the scene. They have set up a fire watch, which means there is someone on site 24 hours a day with water trucks monitoring the situation, Williams said. I expect this to burn for another week or so. He said the cause of the fire looks to be accidental in nature, possibly related to overheated equipment. To see photos of the fire, visit our website, canbynowpod.com.
The city of Canby has opened a dialogue with the Oregon Department of Transportation regarding its plans to build a new traffic signal at Sequoia and Hazel Dell, better known as the Fred Meyer intersection since it's also the primary way in and out of Fred Meyer. City Administrator Rick Robinson told the City Council Wednesday night that ODOT needed to be looped into the process because the already existing traffic light at Sequoia and Highway 99E, which the state manages, could be affected by the signal the city wants to build. The concern is that if the signal patterns between the two intersections are not in sync, it could cause traffic to back up to the intersection with Hazel Dell, which of course would be an even worse situation than we have now. Robinson, who is taking the lead on the project following the recent departure of Public Works Director Jennifer Klein, she happened to accept a position with ODOT in Bend last month, reiterated his personal timeline for the project. He wants it operational by the end of the year, and he says that there's a very good reason for that.
My goal is to have that project out to bid this summer with a goal of having it and I'm told that this was an ambitious goal, but it's still the goal that I'm holding to, having it constructed before the next Christmas season so that we can maybe solve some of the traffic backup problems that happen during the holiday season.
The project has been high on Robinson's and city planners' priority list for some time, but the urgency has been heightened by the Project Shakespeare, a massive 531,000 square foot beverage distribution facility proposed for 42 acres just north of Hazeldale Way. Although the project's traffic study has not yet been made public, its design features over 60 truck loading bays and accommodations for hundreds of employees, and its impact on surrounding roads is expected to be significant. Reduce, reuse, recycle. It's a refrain we've heard since we were little kids on the playground, drinking Capri Sun out of a weird aluminum pouch that definitely was not recyclable. And now we are all grown up. It turns out that reduce, reuse, recycle is much easier to say than it is to actually put into practice. That's where Master Recycler courses come in, a regional class that provides a hands-on opportunity to learn about recycling, waste reduction, and how participants can make an immediate positive difference in the community. Offered only three times a year, this eight-week class meets once a week in the evening and twice on Sundays for half-day field trips. The spring session will start Wednesday, April 3rd, and run for eight consecutive Wednesdays at Clackamas County's Development Services Building, 150 Beaver Creek Road, Oregon City. The popular course includes two field trips and instructions in topics such as recycling processes, composting, alternatives to hazardous household products, thoughtful consumption, and green building. The course is a blend of presentations by professionals in the field, peer group discussions, and project development. The class costs $50, which covers the course materials. Limited scholarships are available. For more details and to apply, visit www.masterrecycler.org. Registration closes Wednesday, March 6th at noon. Quick sports update for you guys this week. The boys and girls basketball teams had one game on Friday. The boys hit the road to take on McMinnville Grizzlies, and despite a strong start, the Cougs dropped a close one, 55-51. The Super Softs led the way again. Diego Arnando poured in 15 points, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists, while Tyler Meade added 11 points, 2 boards, and 6 steals. Chance Miller orchestrated the team's offense all night and finished with 10 assists in the effort. The girls had a tougher time hosting Beaverton. They fell 54-32. League play opens this week. The Cougs will take on Tiger Tuesday and Lake Ridge on Friday. The girls will be on the road for both games, while the boys will be at home. All the action gets underway at 7 p.m.
Hi, Ray Keene here from the Canby Center. You are not alone. If you're having thoughts about ending your life, reach out to someone. Call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Or call a local church such as Canby Christian Church at 503-266-4018. Canby Foursquare Church, 503-266-4444. Or Zora Lutheran Church, 503-266-4061. You know, people around you care even when you may not see it. You are not alone. Brought to you by the Canby Suicide Prevention Task Force.
Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost. Read by Ed Grotsky.
Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds, the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep.
Our guest today is Ed Shriver. He's spent over 35 years with the Department of Fish and Game for our neighboring state of Idaho, but he's a graduate of Oregon State University and Canby High School. We spoke with Ed by phone to discuss his recent promotion and how growing up in Canby gave him the passion and love of the great outdoors that would fuel his future career. So Ed, you were recently named the director of Idaho Fish and Game. Congratulations about that.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You're named the director last month. You had been serving as deputy director. You actually start next week. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
I bet. So you're going to be director of Idaho Fish and Game, but you grew up right here in Canby. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's kind of a long story. So my dad was career military, so actually an Army brat. And
yeah.
I grew up all over the
all
country.
Over.
But yeah, I was born in Virginia, and mom said she had to move 18 times in 16 years or something like that. So,
uh-huh.
You know, all my sisters and I, we were all born in different places. But mom and dad are both native Oregonians, and dad came back to Oregon when I was about in the seventh grade. So I went seventh through high school in Canby.
Oh, okay. Was that the longest for your childhood, where you finally got to put down a little bit of roots and stuff like that?
Yeah, that was absolutely the longest I had up to that time spent in any one place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it felt like roots. And mom and dad built a house out in Lone Elder.
Oh, okay.
We lived in Canby for a little while, and then they bought a place 15 acres out in a rural countryside, and so that's where I lived.
So you grew up out in the country a little bit?
Yeah.
Now, what was that like, and what was Canby like back then?
Oh, you know, your memory is an interesting thing. So mm-hmm. I thought my memory is Canby was pretty idyllic. You know, it was a great
sure.
place, a great community, great small community, and I think if you'd ask my sister, she still thinks it is. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's changed. Every place changes.
But, right.
Being able to grow up, you know, 10 miles out of town, even though Canby was a small town, it was really peaceful and
yeah.
Just really rural. And I had lots of opportunities to, you know, sometimes I'd ride my bike all the way into town. And I had, you know, when I was in seventh grade, and eighth grade, and ninth grade, I was working for vegetable farmers, and I moved pipe for Toffees back in the day when they were
oh, cool.
farming. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, so Canby was a great place to grow up. You could just go down to the river and go swimming with your buddies, and lots of fun.
Sure. That sounds really nice. Yeah, and your sister Joan, she's obviously the founder and owner of the Wild Hare out here. I guess she does still like Canby a little bit from what I understand, so...
Yeah, she loves her community. She really is invested, and I think that's pretty special.
Yeah, for sure. So, Ed, what about your adolescence growing up here in Canby prepared you to be the director of Idaho Fish and Game?
Well, I don't know if it necessarily prepared me, but, you know, there's an opportunity when you work a long time, and I was in Lewiston, Idaho for almost 20 years, and then I got the opportunity to come to headquarters and be the chief of the fisheries program.
Yeah, you've been with Idaho Fish and Game for over 30 years?
Yeah, 35.
That's yeah, amazing.
Came right out of Oregon State and
uh-huh.
Started. Actually, I worked for Idaho while I was going to school, and then right out of college,
yeah.
about 6 months, I got a job in Idaho, and I've been here ever since.
Wow.
But I think, you know, when you reflect, and it was part of that rural upbringing, and really just being able to go down to the river as a kid and go fishing and play in the water and build a raft and, you know, I bought
Huckleberry Finn kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of Huck Finn stuff, and you could do that and not get in trouble. And I bought a mask and a snorkel, and I started looking under the water, and I got really interested in fish. And so some of my running buddies and I, we do a lot of fishing. We drive up the logging road up into the Molalla foothills. And,
sure.
Just spend a whole lot of time exploring the outdoors. I got to work at Millar's Highway Tire for almost all the years I was going through high school. And Senior Jim Millar was a great boss. He taught me a lot about being responsible. But,
oh, cool.
You know, that kind of helped me realize that maybe I wanted to go to school and study something I really enjoyed. So I went to school and studied fish and ended up becoming a fisheries biologist and making a career out of that.
I mean, that is really cool because I think it just seems like maybe more folks would come kind of more from the conservation and more from the sciencey side. It sounds like you definitely came from the just the pure enjoyment of it side, and obviously, you know, picking up the science along the way. But I feel like that probably serves you pretty well because you're serving the folks like you that want to enjoy this aspect of, you know, where we get to live.
Absolutely. And so you think about, there's a lot of folks involved in this broad context of conservation, and you've got folks working for federal agencies and the Park Service and the Forest Service and state fish and game agencies like the Idaho Department of Fish and Game or the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife are those agencies that are really responsible for managing the wildlife and particularly the interactions between people and wildlife. So hunting and fishing and trapping and viewing and what people, it's their wildlife, right? And so our job is to manage it for them and the enjoyment that they get out of it. And in Idaho, the outdoor lifestyle, outdoor heritage, and fishing and hunting is really inseparable and so important in the culture.
Oh, really?
That's cool. West, and especially Idaho. Idaho is a great outdoor state, and outdoor recreation, which includes hunting and fishing, is super important. And, you know, Idaho Fish and Game is a staff of 540. I think you asked me, so what's it like to be the director? And there's a nuance in that we're a government agency, but we're unique in the fact that we are self-funded. We receive, unlike Oregon, who does receive a little general tax revenue, Idaho receives none. We are completely funded by the sales of hunting and fishing licenses and some federal excise tax on hunting and fishing equipment. So it's conservation in Idaho, conservation and management is completely funded by the people who use it. And so in that sense, we are very businesslike. And we are responsible for making the revenue to fund the programs that we implement. And it's a user pay base. And we need to pay attention to that.
Yeah, absolutely. That is interesting to have that, to be in government, but to have that very more consumer kind of focus just as a matter of practicality and survival, really. That's where you get funding. And speaking of what, you know, I was just going to mention, obviously, it wasn't all that long ago talking about fish and game, you know, hunting and fishing was not just for fun. It was a matter of survival, you know, to the early pioneers. And it's only, you know, 150, 170 years ago or so where that was the case. So,
yeah, and those weren't, you know, those weren't some of the finer days in fish and wildlife conservation. Those were the days of market hunting and unregulated use of fish and wildlife, and wildlife populations in general are so much better today than they were 150 years ago. The North American model of wildlife management is, I think, unheralded in the world in its success.
So can you talk a little bit about what kind of the director of Idaho Fishing Game does, or what you will do here starting in about a week? What are some of the kind of responsibilities that you do that are maybe different from what you previously did as a deputy?
Well, they're pretty similar. I mean, as the deputy director, you're basically the wingman for the director. And so what the director does, so I work, if you think about it, in the sense that it's a self-funded government agency, you could think about my role as the CEO, and I work for a board of directors. And so in Idaho, as is in Oregon, that's a commission. And so there is a 7-member commission. Mm-hmm. It's appointed by the governor. And they are who I report to. I am their only employee. Mm-hmm. And as the CEO of the agency, then my responsibility is to implement the policies and the programs in this government corporation, this self-funded government corporation. Mm-hmm. So I have executive staff that run all of the different programs. And I think that's the easiest way for people to think about the job of the director. So I'm not a political appointee. Mm-hmm. The director in Idaho has to come from a fish and wildlife background. And I have 7 bosses. And then I manage a $112 million annual budget. Mm-hmm. And 540 permanent and about 400 to 500 temporary employees.
See, I was thinking that you'd just be wearing a coonskin hat, you know, out in the woods with like rifle and stuff like that all the time. It sounds like I was way off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like that, but, you know, there's a lot of my job that, that is interacting with, the public.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I look as a manager, you know, 20 years as a fish manager, I really enjoy, we manage wildlife, but in the mm-hmm. interaction, we really manage people, you know, fish and wildlife don't read the regulations, people do. And so it's really important to understand what people want and how can you deliver it. You know, there's so many people want so many things from the same wildlife and it's really about providing balance and making sure, first, we have to make sure that the management is sustainable. And we're told by law, preserve, protect, perpetuate, and manage.
And I bet having that kind of more public face and more contact with the public helps a little bit, because no one enjoys being regulated or, you know, having rules. Like, it's just something, no matter how good a person people are, that rules, we buck a little bit. But I think probably having that open communication and just being a face and not a kind of faceless government agency probably goes a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we in fish and game management, because it is the people's resource, and we do try it to the extent possible to provide them the diversity of recreational opportunities that they want. The commission, who really makes all the rules, the director doesn't. I'm the secretary to the commission. They have the authority to set seasons and bag limits, not the Department of Fish and Game. We provide them the science basis to inform their decisions. But it's super participatory. You know, we do so many surveys to try to understand how the public is doing and what they want and what let them flush through the different alternatives. And the commission meetings are all open to the public. So, you know, kind of like school board meetings or anything like that. And everybody gets the opportunity to come in and let the commission know what they think as they think about what the seasons and the rules will look like for the next year.
Cool. And do you ever get back Oregon way at all? Do you ever visit or even visit Canby at all, see how things have changed or anything like that?
Yeah, I do. For about 5 or 6 years, I represented Idaho in a process called US v. Oregon, where the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho and the Columbia River Indian tribes worked together on managing the fisheries and the fish runs. And so that brought me back to the Portland area, at least every other month. And I'd get out and have dinner with my folks and get to see my sister and go to a restaurant. So I do get to see Canby every once in a while, but it's quite different than it was when I grew up there.
Yeah, I bet. And I don't know if there's still boys making rafts on the river. There may be.
Yeah. So Idaho, you know, you asked about the differences in fish, you know, fish and wildlife, they don't know what state they live in, but the differences, I think, for right. Idaho, politics are different in Idaho. Oregon definitely has the kind of east side, west side, and Oregon much more so than Idaho. The majority of the population lives in a minority of the geography, and Idaho tends to be a little bit more unified politically and more rural in general. So I think we don't struggle so much in Idaho for fish and wildlife management to be relevant to most of the citizens. And I think states that become more urban, folks have the opportunity to become kind of separated from wildlife and conservation. And, that's probably a difference. In Idaho, too, our department has our law enforcement integrated into the agency. Where in Oregon, you guys use the state police to stand up the enforcement side of the fish and wildlife program. And that's integrated in our program. So our enforcement officers, even though they have full authority, they're also helping us manage and they get out and interact with the wildlife and the people as well.
Yeah. That's cool. And that is definitely something that I think we do see out here as far as that urban-rural split when it comes to wildlife issues and things like that, where, you know, you see folks, when it comes to those issues, a lot of times, you know, the Portland area versus Eastern Oregon or more rural areas, not even speaking the same language, it feels like, you know, and kind of some resentment that comes out from that because, as you said, it's obviously the case here in Oregon as well. The majority does live in the minority space. So when you come to statewide issues, they can kind of dictate at times. So
certainly.
It's interesting.
Certainly. And Oregon has had more wildlife issues settled by a voter initiative, a ballot, if you will, and Idaho has not. So Idaho did. Idaho a few years ago passed a constitutional amendment making fishing and hunting a right. And that's some of the different politics between the two states. So.
Well, that's interesting. It's actually written into the Constitution as a right.
Yes, it is.
Is that unique?
No, actually, there are probably about 18 states that I know of in the United States that have added a constitutional amendment protecting the public's right to fishing and hunting and trapping.
That's pretty cool.
Well, I think it just says something about the culture of the particular states. And
for sure,
not wanting to lose that really important opportunity.
Awesome. Well, Ed, this has been really fun. Thanks so much for talking to us. Congratulations on your success. It's cool to see somebody from even an Army brat who was here for a few years, but graduated from Canby, going on to do great things for our neighboring state over in Idaho. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Hang on a second. I had a different song I wanted to play for this.
What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. There it is.
What?
This is the best I've ever heard.
Yes. I don't think many people realize that Freddie Mercury originally performed this song on the recorder.
And man,
it was amazing.
Ever prevalent right now with us being
the champions of the world of the snowman
of
world
the snowman in Canby world.
Well, if you guys haven't heard, we did win the snowman contest, and we have you guys to thank for that.
Yeah, seriously,
honestly, thank you. We're not expecting it.
Literally at all. Like, you know when, like, people get up and they're like, I did not prepare a speech.
Right, right.
Like, for the Oscars.
And everyone's like, yeah, BS.
Yeah, yeah. You had...
You've been preparing this ever since you accepted the role.
Like, I've prepared for when Conan O'Brien wants to interview me on his show.
Right.
Like, there are things that I'm prepared for.
Right.
Winning the snowman contest, never was I prepared for that.
Like, well, like, less expected for you than being interviewed by Conan O'Brien.
I expected to be on Conan O'Brien before I won the Cambie snowman contest.
Wow. That's weird.
I guess. It's also weird that we won, but yeah, it is super cool.
It's just, it is just very validating that you guys actually listen to us. And we do. We appreciate it so much. Like, we won a little bit of money, which is great because we had some bills.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, now we can pay those.
Running the company is expensive.
Yes. So that is nice. But what matters more is your guys' support. Honestly, those aren't just words. Like, that was what was so exciting was like, these people really, they love us. They really love us. but there's a lot of people did vote just in general. And that was really cool.
And it was cool. And when they do this again, like, they're going to do another Scarecrow next year, right? And
that's,
Snowman.
As possibly. Far as we know. Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's some talk that, so like, it was Shannon Alee and Hot Rod DreamWorks.
Right.
And then I think it was just her and that company that she works for, her dad owns, for the Scarecrow. And then Victory Point and Sarah Spoon, they signed on to help with the snowman.
Got it.
But it was just them. And I think there's some talk of, like, maybe some type of downtown association might be forming, or some type of group might form, because people just loved it. Like, everyone loves seeing the snowmans. Like I said, a lot of people voted. And it there's a lot of desire to see that happen. Maybe do things like more even seasonally throughout the year. Maybe do like leprechauns around St. Patrick's Day and stuff like that. Have like, I don't know, Cupids around it. But, you know.
4th of July British soldiers. Right. I don't know. What do you do for 4th of July?
Beer and fried chicken.
I don't think that we can do that without getting in trouble.
Oh.
You know.
I mean, we can do it. But yeah,
beer just hanging out in public.
Yeah, we'd wind up in our own police beat. But
police beat for this week. I got arrested for putting beer out with
children.
Sorry.
But yeah, there's just a lot of desire, I think, to see that continue. And people are seeing that, like, Shannon needs help, you know, and they're, like, willing to step out and do that. So, yes, as far as we know, it's definitely going to happen again. It seems like there's a strong grassroots desire for it to happen again. So.
And it's super cool and exciting to see people getting into the spirit of things and being a part of the community. And that's exactly what we want to do as Cambie Now. We want to help facilitate that, be a catalyst for you being informed on what's happening in town, and to inspire people to get involved and have fun with the Cambie.
Here's what was so cool to me about the snowman thing is that, like, it's one of those things that you hear the idea and you're like, oh, that's cute, I guess, you know, like, I guess that would be,
call me when that actually
I guess
happens.
That would be cool, but it's just going to be one of those things that's just like, oh, it's just a cutesy thing, unless the people really get into it.
Right.
And they did. Like, everyone in the snowman. Like,
I'm surprised too. Okay, I'm going to be honest. The Cambie signs and graphics, their snowman was the best.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
It was amazing.
It was the best snowman.
Yeah.
So for us to win, like, that's cool. But it was really cool to see the ingenuity of people. What was the tank one?
That was Fisher's. Fisher's Plumbing.
Yeah.
I actually really liked that one. They came in second.
Did they?
And the it was kind of cute artwork, like, but just I loved that it was so in line with their business.
Right.
You know, that they used a water tank to make a snowman out of, and I think there was like a little penguin that was like a propane tank or some kind of like little tank. But yeah, just the buy-in from the businesses were what really made it special.
Sure.
There were so many that were, like, Oliver Insurance had, like, a snowman in a little, like, Fisher-Price car that had, like, gotten, like, hit a pole, you know, from distracted driving. So, like, a lot of them did their own take, like we did, you know, and that was really cool, and I think that's what really made it cool.
And I can just see in like 10 years, this will be a Cambie institution of like, it's the snowman thing. And we're going to have
you
like
see it.
Animatronic T-Rex snowmen. Yeah. Like, it'll just become this huge thing.
I wonder what happened to the Canby Science and Graphics one. Like, maybe they auction that off or can get our hands on that.
Ooh, that would be cool. What if we reuse it next year? What if we just always end up using the recycled Canby Science and Graphics one?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. we probably have to ask them.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they would recycle them.
Yeah. No, it was pretty cool.
Cool.
Do you have feedback for me?
I do. Do you want to do our main thing first, and then we'll do feedback
sure.
at the end?
Yeah.
Okay. So our main thing that I wanted to talk about was the splash pad.
Splashdown!
Yeah, I know. I knew you were going to go that. So, sort of.
Almost. Sort it's of. The closest we're going to get.
It's definitely the closest you're
going to get. I'll count this as a victory for Canby.
So people have been wanting a splash pad in Canby forever.
Yeah.
People look around and they're like, all these like tiny towns have them. Like Hubbard has a splash pad. And people just get like so bitter. Like Canby doesn't
Why
have
doesn't Canby have this?
And so we are getting one.
Yeah.
Like all signs are pointing that we are getting one. The city council's on board. The parks advisory board is on board.
They are aboard.
The funding is there. It's going to be funded through what's called SDC, their system development charges. So basically developers, when they develop, they have to pay into funds for street, sewer, kind of the development of the infrastructure that they're going to use. And then some of it also is allocated for parks.
Sure.
So this is money that has to be spent on the development of parks. It can't even be spent on like park maintenance.
Oh, okay.
So the funds are there. Political capital is there to use it for a splash pad. So the big question is, where is it going to go?
Right.
It would almost certainly have to go on, there's no reason for the city to put it on anything but land owned by the city.
Sure.
So like people have talked about like, oh, what about doing the along with the fields, the sports field complex that they want to do around Ackerman or maybe by the swim center.
Right.
Like, the city does not own that land. They lease that land from the school district. So they probably would not do that there. So some of the big options would be Legacy Park. That's the one right by Ackerman.
Right.
It's got like the sand pit and a playground there and the soccer fields behind it.
Yeah.
There's Maple Street Park, which is like a really large park with like a big playground. Quite a bit of parking.
Spent literally like half of my childhood
there.
In that park.
Yeah, yeah. So you probably know like a lot of these parks better than I do because you grew up here.
Yeah. I know them better than you.
Yeah.
I grew up. I know.
Right. Right. And I do know them better than
you have children.
And then Waite Park. I think those are kind of the big three that people have been, as this has been discussed on Facebook.
Yeah. In my opinion, and this might just be my hot take, but I think Waite Park gets enough. Stuff like it's where all the big events are held and stuff like that. I think Maple Park would probably be where I would put it.
Okay.
And when I was a kid, and I don't know if it's still like this or not, but when I was a kid, Maple Park was a big deal because they had this stand there where like you could go get activities and rent like frisbees and wall balls and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And it felt more like almost like you're going to go spend the day there and you can, and I don't know, it wasn't just like, let's go play basketball at the park. It was like, hey, let's go spend the day at the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like over the years it's lost that appeal. I mean, again, I'm 30 years old. There's not much of a reason without kids to go to a park, but
people will definitely be looking at you weird.
Like, why is this guy here? He's playing tennis by himself. But if it has something like that splash pad, I feel like it could re-energize what that park had at one point, where it could be more of a day thing.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. When you would spend days there, did you live near Maple Street Park?
No.
Okay.
No, we lived close to it, but it wasn't like we were like right next to it.
So you would drive there?
Or
ride your bike there?
Both. Yeah, we lived at, when we went there, we lived at the Timber Terrace Apartments.
Okay.
So it's down on Pine. So it's
pretty close.
Yeah, it's like a 2-minute drive, probably like a 10-15 minute walk there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a nice walk to get there.
Yeah, probably your closest park.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, we'd have to go across downtown to get to Waite Park.
Yeah.
And there were really wasn't much else other than that at that point.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people want to see it at Maple Street.
Yeah.
That might be either Maple Street or Legacy. I didn't like take a real close scientific tally, but those were the two big ones, and maybe Maple Street was higher, maybe Legacy was higher. Legacy doesn't really have parking. They'd have to like seriously rework that. Like, it gets full with parking without the splash pad. So
I think that there's this kind of this old Camby, new Camby thing.
No. Where no, that doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't
exist.
That's
a myth.
But like, you can almost see that dichotomy between the Maple Street Park and the Legacy Park.
Yes.
And I feel like if we're going to allow Camby to grow,
it's a north side, south side.
It is.
Yeah.
And we need to revitalize that part of Camby along with the newer developments that are coming in, or else it's going to just grow in one direction.
Yeah.
And one direction. Hey, that's me. And then it's like we're kind of leaving some of Camby in the past.
Yeah. So I'm a big proponent of it going in Waite Park. And yeah. I hear what you're saying about how they kind of already have stuff. But those are just events.
Yeah.
Those are one-day things. And there's a reason. It's because that's like the centrally located park. That's not like favoring the north side or the south side. And having those events there and bringing people to that area, the city puts on those events because they want people downtown.
Sure.
It is a service to the downtown businesses and all of the surrounding businesses, which ultimately helps the city and strengthens the city. And so, like, Waite Park would not be the easiest place to put it, honestly. Like,
it's pretty small. You'd have to restructure the entire park.
You'd have to redesign the whole park. You'd have to take out some trees.
Yeah.
Which that would be tough. When you're talking about old Camby, new, like, that would be painful for a lot of people, I think. I think that there may be some trees that they could look at that would have to be removed anyway just because of disease or getting older. So so maybe it could be done in conjunction with that. Maybe there could be other. So, like, Counselor Spoon on Facebook, she talked about, like, you know, in her dream, like, maybe this would not even be possible, but her dream would be for the city to buy the lot that's right next to the library, just that gravel lot, and put it there.
Yeah.
So I think that would be cool. Parking would be a concern as well, but so maybe Waite Park, maybe there, maybe somewhere else, but I feel like it should be downtown.
Sure.
For that whole summer to bring people downtown, and I feel like if you put it in Legacy, if you put it in Maple Street, like, that would probably be simpler because there's a space there. It could kind of just be plopped down. Legacy would have to be redesigned a little bit. Maple Street probably would too. But it would you'd primarily be servicing those areas, you know, and just the people who already live there, already go to those parks. It would be kind of more favorable to that area over another area.
Yeah.
You put it downtown, you're invested. It's an investment in the community. It's something strategic. It's not just like checking the box. Okay, Camby, you have your splash pad now. You know, it's a very strategic. We're investing this money to strengthen our whole community through revitalizing our downtown core.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm super on put it on downtown. If we're gonna do this, it should be something that has the best chance of like being a benefit to the whole community. Literally, because it's more centrally located and easier for people to get there.
I think you're more like, we're going to end up with a studio down in Camby, and you just want to be able to run across the street real quick.
Just like,
run through the streams
just,
and run
just
back.
Leave my kids there all day and just like check on them through the window periodically. Like, no, that's never occurred to me. This is purely like philanthropic and just out of the goodness of my heart.
Right.
Like, all of my opinions are completely what's best for Camby, and it never enters my mind what might be best for me. So
I think no matter where it goes, as long as it's not out in the middle of nowhere, people are going to enjoy it. It's going to be worth having. So I'm happy to see that that's coming.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be exciting. Put it in Waite Park.
Maple Street Park.
Okay, you want feedback?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, so we've got a couple.
Ooh, what did they say? Do they want to go on a couple date?
No.
Oh, not like a couple.
Yeah, like a couple as in like two of them. Yeah.
That was my bad joke for the episode.
I've got one coming, you guys. it's bad. Okay, so Ed Shriver. Sorry, not Ed Shriver. Byron Shriver. He's actually Ed's dad.
Oh, okay.
So Byron Shriver, I had Ed on the brain. He was on Facebook. He said, you rock, Tyler. Thank you for keeping Cambyites well-informed. Love your podcast. And he did not say that because his son was on the show because he didn't know that yet. So
now, did he tag you as Tyler or did he just say Tyler?
He just, he posted it on my Facebook wall.
Okay, so it was to you.
It was definitely me. Sorry.
So nobody emails me or talks to me directly.
On Facebook.
That's cool.
This guy, he's... you know, an older guy, and he just loves the podcast. I met him at one of the Nutcracker shows.
Oh, for your daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was in the Nutcracker.
Right.
Yeah. My daughter was in the Nutcracker here in Canby, and I ended up meeting him, and I already had known him, that he was a fan of the show, but I got to meet him in person, and he was just like, yeah! Like, he was, like, so excited, like, he was meeting a celebrity. It was, like, kind of embarrassing, actually.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. He's such a sweet man, and that was really cool that he gave us that feedback. So thank you, Byron. We love that you listen and like the show. So, yeah. And then we actually got another review on Facebook from Derek Riggs. He says, a good way to keep up with what's going on in our town. These two have it well organized. Thumbs up emoji.
They said the two of
the
us.
The two of us.
I'm included.
You're in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really cool. I love the reviews, and a lot of the more recent reviews we've gotten have kind of taken that angle that this is a great way to stay connected, and that is what we're all about. So it's really cool that people are picking up on. It's nice when you like what you're trying to do aligns with how people are actually receiving
which doesn't always
happen. So that's really cool. Please keep those reviews coming.
Yes,
and,
please.
Whether they are just comments, kind of like Byron, those are really encouraging to us, and we love that. The reviews do help us out on Facebook or iTunes. They help raise our profile in search engines.
Those are. Is there anywhere else that they can leave a review? Because those are the big two. They're not going to go on Yelp. Yelp review.
I think those are really the big two for a podcast and for what we are, Facebook and iTunes.
Yeah.
I know like Podcast Addict and a lot of podcast apps have reviews as well that come from iTunes.
Sure.
So like if you review on iTunes, it also shows up on these other apps.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This is my first time podcasting. So as far as I know, those are the only two things that exist. Those are the only two things I check. So, but yeah, please keep those coming. They're really encouraging to us, and they really do help us out. It's just a fun, cheap, free, easy way to help support us.
Yeah, for sure.
So
that's great.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited about the feedback and Splashdown is coming.
I'm going to put into the city the next time I see the mayor that it should be called the Tyler Clawson Memorial.
I'm not dead.
I don't know how else to put it on there.
In memory of Tyler Clawson. I don't know.
Tyler Clawson.
Splashdown.
Tyler Clawson Memorial. That's all. It just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
Splash pad. City of Canby.
That'd be great.
Tyler Clawson.
Yeah.
Splashdown.
If that happens,
it'd be great.
I'll be good.
You could just retire at that point. Yeah. Cool. All right. We're going to kick it over to In the Studio with Hannah Ray Lambert and Stephanie Wise.
Yeah. It's going to be good. In the Studio with is a video series by Canby Now contributor Hannah Ray Lambert, profiling the work and process of local artists. In this episode, she sits down with Canby High School senior Stephanie Wise, who was recently awarded a scholarship to the Pacific Northwest College of Art.
I'm Stephanie Wise. I'm a freelance artist, mostly specializing in tattoo commissions and print work. I've been creating as long as I've had crayons, I guess. just like drawing whatever, and my mom kind of put me into art classes, and then middle school, high school, I really got more into, I guess, tattoo work. I got really into it sophomore year. Like freshman year, I had a couple friends that were like, you should draw me this because I'm interested in getting it tattooed. But sophomore year is when I really started licensing that I could do this and getting commissions out there. I'm friends with multiple tattoo artists, not to the point where like I will sell them work to get done. I'm hoping to reach that point. But mostly it's like people that I know or people that have seen me online that like know what like my style is, and then they're like, I'd really like to get that done, and they give me a reference or something, and I just kind of draw it, and then they take it to a shop. So yeah. I definitely enjoy more natural and like macabre elements of the world, but mostly ink, classic pen and ink drawings, like really biblical style, like etching and stuff like that, yeah. But I've recently been trying to get into color again. It's just something I don't find I do a lot, but recently got accepted in art school, so I'm pushing myself to try different mediums.
And that was gonna be my next question. Yeah. Art school, that's a big opportunity. Where are you going?
Pacific Northwest College of Art.
And was that like the one you knew?
That's
you
the
to go
one,
to?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And I heard you got a scholarship.
Yes, I did, yeah.
How does that make you feel?
Ecstatic. It was just really mind-blowing because I entered into the early application system maybe expecting $4,000 renewable, and I got $56,000, which is crazy. Absolutely bonkers.
Have you always found that those people around you have been supportive of your path as an artist?
Yes and no. It's very mixed because I have a lot of, like, the older generation who like don't really understand tattoo artistry in a nutshell, so they don't understand like what my path is leading to the point of like tattoo artistry and like getting my commissions out there. But my grandparents have been really supportive, so that's always nice. And my dad, of course, he is like telling all of his friends to get my art if they want anything done. So yeah.
You also sell some prints and stuff,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Is that something you enjoy doing, or is that sort of like a way to fund your tuition costs?
Both. Yeah, it's very mixed. I definitely enjoy selling print works. It's one of those things where if I don't want to make something on the spot or do like commissions all the time, I can just be like, these are my later works and these are things that people have enjoyed and have bought.
I would think it would be kind of unnerving putting yourself out there trying to sell your work, especially
yeah.
as young as you are. What was that process like?
I'm very, my friends always tell me that I like need to get out there more, but it's kind of like, I don't know, there's very mixed signals online when you do, anytime anyone puts themselves out there in any kind of art form, to like get their stuff sold. So I find that like people aren't that easy to sway when it comes to pricing, because I tend to make prices lower so that people are more like, I'm more approachable. But that sucks if I actually need money. But yeah, I find that it's very mixed. Everything's very mixed when it comes to selling your art.
Have any set goals, or are you just kind of seeing where it's taking you?
A little bit of both. Everything's a little bit of both in the art world. But I definitely see myself at a shop doing tattoo work or print work. I'd love to be able to have a studio where I can make prints of things that I've already designed and on t-shirts and like custom things like that, and also be able to do tattooing customly and stuff like that. So,
well, where can people see your work if they want to know more about it?
Definitely on my Facebook page, which is kind of my personal, but I post like ads on there most of the time. Also on Instagram, which is Guilt Tripping. Other than that, it's just Stephanie Wise, my email's in my description and stuff like that.
To see a video version of this interview with samples of Stephanie's work, or to check out more local content produced by Canby Now podcast team, visit our YouTube channel or go to youtube.com and search Canby Now. And don't forget to subscribe. And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Ed Shriver. Got it right. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
On our next show, we hear from Fido Pet Food Bank, an incredible local nonprofit dedicated to ensuring people and their pets get to stay together. They're like Child Protective Services, but in reverse, and also for pets. Wow, that's a terrible outro.
It's
who wrote
terrible.
That?
If you have a news tip or an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, like bad jokes,
better,
please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow, or on our website, canbenowpod.com.